This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Main Event, a roundtable experience looking at today's pro wrestling landscape. And now, here's your host, Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to home for everything modern day flamethrower, the worldwide leader, biggest company in all of professional wrestling, swallows up little companies. Here's the cheese, and here's the mice running through the maze. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. I'm your host, Scott Criscolo. The reason I use that analogy is because we're going to get into a news story that has wrestling fans chasing the cheese through the maze. Because that's what I feel like wrestling fans do now when it comes to wrestling news stories. Chase. That's not right. Chase. Now, we will get into Sunday, as everyone knows. Sunday, our next, it feels like our 37th pay-per-view in the last 3 weeks. No Mercy, returning to the fold. The last No Mercy was in 2008 in Portland, Oregon. Bet you didn't know that. And that is this Sunday in Sacramento. I'll play it later. And we will go over that. We will do a full preview of that in the second half of the show. But in the first half tonight, I want to talk about this carrot dangling over the internet wrestling community and its members. But first, let me bring in the core 3.5, because I needed to kick it old school tonight, because anytime we talk about TNA Impact Wrestling, only these guys can understand the true brevity of talking about it on this program. Let me bring in first a guy who, Jesus Christ, I can't remember the last time he was on this show, the Boogie of the Bayou, who might be a little depressed because his boy got fired, and now the all-time leader in interim coaches in college football is now interim coach for like his 44th team, Mr. Andrew Reich.
You think I'm depressed that Les Miles was fired?
You know, Ed Orgeron.
You don't know
me
well enough.
You know he's not going to keep the. You know he's not going to keep the job, right? They'll fire him and try to find. You know,
if he wins out, it's the Steve Fisher clause. If he wins out, he has to keep the job.
The next head coach of LSU will be Lane Kiffin. Mark my words.
I really, honestly think that, just going by logic, not like dream jobs and people like that, I think it's Jimbo Fisher. I think Tom Herman is going to Texas, and I think Jimbo Fisher.
Charlie Strong's going to get fired already?
Oh, yeah, they're in trouble. Charlie Strong's in big trouble with the boosters.
Yeah, of course he did, because, you know.
But let's cut to the chase.
Let's cut to the chase of the fact Notre Dame sucks. No. Mr. Reich, pleasure as always. Of course, he is your co-host of the NBA Team Podcast with Mr. Murray. Season starts in about a month, sir.
Very soon. We'll have our last two parts for our season preview right before the season starts.
Excellent. They've been fantastic, too. Thank Great you. Job by both you guys. A guy who's going to do rank and defile how to cherry pick the TNA knockouts, Mr. Jordan Duncan.
I've got a premonition. That will be a great episode. Scott, did you say that we're rats chasing cheese?
No, I didn't say anything about the animal. I just said cheese in a maze. I didn't even say what the animal
If was. You're going to call
if you
me
want to
a, rat,
a rat,
I, despite all my rage, I am still just a rat in a cage.
Oh, you are my little cherub, Brock. Jordan Duncan, of course, the host of Rankin Defile.
Hey, you know what year I was born, Scott?
Yes.
1979. True story.
Really?
That's another Smashing Pumpkins song. Yes, just
really, yes. We're trying to follow up with something cute and smart and we can't.
Yes, it is. You know what this means, JD. You know what this means. When the episodes of Impact hit the network, we'll get to do live watch with Cheeks!
Finally! This is what we've been building to all this time.
More anticipated than Barely Legal 97. All right. JD, always better. Speaking of cheese and mice and mazes, a guy who probably would understand that analogy better than anybody because he is the conscience. Place to be nation. Mr. Steve Willey.
Yes, indeed. I am the conscience and I am back and I don't know what to say. I'm kind of excited to be here with my, my dear, good, close friend, Andrew Riesch and, Jordan Duncan, who is dressed up as Jim Harbaugh today.
That's right.
Going for a hug.
Eating my boogers as we speak, fellas.
Oh, God. Mr. Willey, of course, is the tri-host of Clotheslines and Headlines. I'm sure you spoke about many of the topics we'll be discussing on last week's show, and I'm sure you'll get into it on next week's show as well. But thank you for coming back. You're always welcome here.
I've never left. I've been on the Skype call for this entire time, 671 hours.
He never left. He's just been waiting.
Episode 50, I've been here.
That was like the
He's
Bond.
Like the lawnmower, man.
Well, it's like the Bond. That was the last line of Quantum of Solace when M asked him, "We need you back." I never left. Except if you say it in British, Steve, that'd be even cooler.
Yeah, I was just on mute the whole time. I really messed it up.
Steve, thank you. And finally, joining us, filling the seat, Mr. Ben Morris, favorite person on the planet, could not join us this evening because he is in Manhattan. It is the annual New York Comic Con, so he is there on behalf of Marvel.com and PlayStation. He just doesn't know it. But joining us this evening is another great friend of mine and great friend of the show. He's been on before. He's one of the hard-traveling fanboys. Speaking of Comic Con, of course, he lives too far away to be there, but it's Greg Phillips. What's up, man?
Oh, I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on. You know, people out there, not to let them too on the inside, but this appearance has been planned for a long time. I mean, we've been working on this for weeks.
Big time. It's kind of like the
shooting emails. Corgan,
kind of like the Corgan Vince negotiations. I know you're missing the chance to meet Iron Fist this weekend, but you know.
Who's to say I can't just hire someone to be Iron Fist for the
weekend? That's true. Iron Fist is the next will be the next Netflix show.
That's right, and actually Earl Hebner is putting on a production of Iron Fist in the West Virginia area.
So. Earl Hebner was Iron Fist. Iron Fist, the man who sells things out of his car.
See, I thought I was going to go to a Chatterbait joke with Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Something about ruling with an Iron Fist, or
no? That's Jordan's. You know how Steve Austin has two pod? He used to have the two podcasts.
Unleashed.
Well, Jordan
yeah.
has two podcasts.
Yeah, that's my
defile and spank defile. So, anyway, Greg, thanks for coming on, man. Thanks for joining us in the roundtable.
My pleasure. My absolute pleasure. I love talking about wrestling even more than I love talking about comics.
And even more talking about SEC football, which is having its ups and downs this season.
Oh, well, for me, it's been mostly ups thus far, but that could change this weekend. Who knows?
I can.
Damn you.
Big games this weekend in the SEC. The big one, of course, in primetime, Bama going to Fayetteville.
Yeah.
On the Razorbacks. Huge game there.
Losable game, actually. Losable game for us. We'll see.
I think so. And, of course, Tennessee heads to the 12th man, Kyle Field in College Station, to take on Kevin Sumlin's Aggies. Big game there as well. Will Joshua Dobbs fall behind by 21 points and then score, 40 in the second half? We'll see.
Also, anyway, shout out to my Troy Trojans sitting at 4-1 right now and looking good in the Sun Belt Conference race. So,
you know how disrespectful ESPN is to Troy? This past weekend, when they did their graphics package, they were using your old Troy State logo.
Oh, my God. That's like 2001.
I know. They still used it.
We've been Troy since I got to campus in 2002.
I know. That's ESPN's typical, ignorant arrogance. But anyway, Greg, thank you. Guys, part two of the show, we will get into No Mercy. Although, let's be honest, I've been digging on the network, the little Maurice doing No Mercy with a little perfume bottle. That's actually kind of neat. I've kind of enjoyed that. Miz, not so much. But we'll get to him later. All right, the story that I've obviously been talking about since the start of the show is, of course, the ongoing saga with Impact Wrestling. This past weekend, they had Bound for Glory on Saturday? Saturday.
It was Sunday.
Sunday, and I know a few of you watched it. I did not. And then they did taping. But, of course, the big story is, on Friday, they didn't have a pot to piss in. So, the cheese was dropped in the maze, and everybody ran after it because everybody was wondering what was going on. I think the best one was that WWE was going to fund Bound for Glory And what was the main event? Was it Lashley and
Lashley and EC3.
Oh, okay. What was it? Oh God. EC3 was going to win. Was he already champion, or was he?
No, Lashley was the champion.
EC3 was chasing.
EC3 was going to win the title, and then Triple H is going to come out in the end and go, "Good job, Bateman." But I don't know. That wasn't going to happen either.
I think that was just in your dreams.
but really, that would have been pretty cool, and it would have spiked. All right. So obviously, the story is all over the place. A story came out yesterday. And it was in a couple of publications, including the, I think Forbes had it as well, that a deal was reached where everybody got what they wanted. WWE bought just the library and the copyright to the actual term TNA and Impact. Billy Corgan, I don't know how the fuck this guy became this big a wrestling fan. He actually wanted to own a company. I just don't get it. Owns the infrastructure, the contracts, and the TV slot, which is really obviously the library, the most important chunk of the package, which is, of course, the piece that was not there when WCW folded up like a cheap suit. And if that's the case, then everybody wins. But here's the difference, and this is why everybody's getting all flummoxed, and I want to go around the room on this. I'll start with you, Greg, because you're a big TNA guy. The difference is, for me anyway, the word competition and alternative. In the Monday Night War, WWF at the time, we'll say F, and WCW were equals, equal companies. So technically that's competition. But now there's never going to be competition for WWE. No matter how lousy anything within the company can be, no one is going to come close to them in terms of capital, in terms of infrastructure, in terms of television, in terms of anything. So from this point, it's about alternatives. Why has Ring of Honor succeeded? They're an alternative. They're not competition. Why did TNA fail? Because instead of what Jeff Jarrett wanted to do, which was be an alternative, he knew he wasn't going to compete even in 2002. Dixie wanted to be competition. And she caused them to go bankrupt. Right or wrong, Greg Phillips? Where am I wrong there?
I think you're largely right on that. I mean, I was saying that as far back as 2006, you know, when they brought in, you know, bringing in Angle was a great move. But even when they brought in the Dudleys in 05, I think, when they brought in, when you know, there were certain acts that it helped TNA to bring in. But at a certain point, the show itself became more about trying to do WWE-style segments, and that's when it went off the rails. And, you know, for people like me, we were just looking for an alternative because mid-2000s WWE was really bad, by and large. Mm-hmm. And people were looking for an alternative. We were screaming for an alternative. And for a while, we had that with TNA. The problem is that the frustrating part as a fan was when they would make these moves that you knew weren't going to work. Hey, let's go head-to-head with Monday Night Raw. Not going to work. Hey, let's bring in Hulk Hogan to run the company. Not going to work. You know, hey, let's have Vince Russo have full control, carte blanche, over all the creating the company. Not going to work. So, but every time that they did these things, we as fans of TNA would know that it was not going to work out, but we had to, you had to stomach it because it was the only, for a lot of us, nationally televised alternative, if you will, to WWE. You know, for those of us, especially that live in the South, we don't have access. We didn't have access for years to Ring of Honor. We didn't have access to you know, CZW or any of these indies. So our only source for wrestling was WWE or TNA. And so I tried to support TNA as much as I could. But you're very much correct that Dixie's fascination with being seen as a big boy company instead of a bigger boy company compared to the other indies is just strange. Going all the way back to when TNA forced their wrestlers to stop taking indie bookings for a long time. I don't know if anybody remembers that. That was a big to-do back around 06, I think. And it's like, why can't you just be content with building upon having the best in-ring product in the country, which they did for a while. Or at least as far as the between the two, why can't you focus on having more of a realism type vibe to you? And they never did. And then they caught fire again around 2011, 2012, and had some really good stuff going on. And then, you know, it didn't take too long before it got driven into the ground, and the show became just one long, giant Aces and Eights promo segment. So, you know, I think you're right, Scott, and it pains me to say that, both that you're right and that TNA tried to become competition to WWE and failed. So.
No wonder Greg's never allowed on this show.
What the fuck? Wow. I'm just the poster boy for WWE with credibility. No. GD, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, history-wise, that's kind of been their biggest issue, and I think makes what's happening right now all the more kind of a bummer is that their product right now is an alternative, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's they really have found a groove, and again, if you know their history, they kind of find these grooves, and it's building momentum from them. You know, they have these little hot periods, and they've never been able to sustain it. But I think they're in one right now, and they really are an alternative to WWE programming right now as we discuss it. Because, and I think that's what makes this news a little bit. I don't know what word to say other than like it's sad. You know, like if they were to go under, and it looks like they're going to survive, and that's TNA's probably their calling card that they survive everything. You know. We probably are not the first podcast to talk about TNA's death, and there's probably been many people over the years who've talked about TNA's death, and it still hasn't happened. You know, if we were talking about this 3 years ago, I really wouldn't care if they were gone because it was such a lousy product, like Greg was saying, but I don't really know what changed. I think it kind of comes down to two things. With wrestling, probably with any form of entertainment, I think the two biggest factors are know your product and know your audience. You know, they have to know the people on their roster and what they're good at, and they have to know what their audience wants to see. You know, Greg mentioned Hulk Hogan, and yeah, Hulk Hogan's the biggest name in pro wrestling history, but that doesn't mean your pro wrestling audience wants to see him. You know, if Hulk Hogan showed up, like, on a PWG show, he wouldn't get booed, but, it's, you know, that's they're going to sell out regardless. It's kind of a thing where people say, oh, they're wrestling fans, so they like this kind of wrestling. Well, not everybody likes WWE wrestling. That's the most popular by a long shot, but it's also, you know, like comparable to vanilla ice cream. Some people don't like vanilla, you know, so if you're saying you like this, you know, people are going to reject it. And I think that was a big problem with them for a long time, was not knowing their audience at all. And so now it seems like they're listening to them right now, so we'll see where it goes.
Steve, what do you think?
I think it's very difficult to listen to the audience that was at Bound for Glory first.
Yeah.
Because there really wasn't any TNA fans there.
That's their biggest problem right now, too. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, they need something.
No pop, no fanfare. Yeah.
No actual fans. Yeah, that's like my big takeaway from Bound for Glory is that they had about 100 fans that were there in the front little section, and everyone else was a plant around the ring and, you know, off the camera. They only had like one row of fans, and that part was kind of sad. But they are in a bit of a hot streak right now, and most of that I think is from the Hardys getting people to start watching the show a little bit more, and then realizing, hey, this is actually not a bad show. And it's because our friend Dixie, who we're talking about, has probably stepped back a little bit, and Corgan does have more power, and feels like something different. Mm-hmm. It feels a little bit more like the 2004, 2005, 2006 TNA, where they have started a solid X division that's completely separated from the actual product, the heavyweight division, except like the little crossover that they did with Lashley. And they're having different segments. They have their knockouts, your Hardy division, your heavyweight division, and it splits the 2 hours up nicely.
Okay. What do you think, Grish?
Well, I think some people here make good points about TNA right now at the point that it is, with the programming and how it feels like it's an improved product, it's more enjoyable. The Bound for Glory show I watched was a fairly good show up and down, regardless of obviously a lot of issues with production and just no fans and, you know, a lot some other things that the other guys mentioned. You know, it reminds me, you know, me and Ben wrote about this on the website a few years ago, that you know, but when things started to really kind of tumble when Sting left and Bischoff left and Hogan left late in 2013, where it kind of feels like the end of WCW, where, you know, right around 2001, Johnny Ace got the book. A lot of the superstars were letting their contracts roll out without having to make appearances. And they were pushing other guys, and it felt like the product was actually turning a corner. But you knew that it wasn't, like, sustainable, because it felt like it was just a stopgap to whatever the next phase was, or the next big move was, whether it was Turner canceling it or Bischoff buying it or Vince buying it, and it wound up Vince bought it. You know, now this is kind of strange because you're in a situation where TNA's history potentially is being bought by Vince McMahon just purely for the entertainment of filling up the network with more content. But when it comes to the product going forward with Billy Corgan, and if Dixie Carter is out of the picture, which we're not absolutely sure about what that whole hierarchy is going to be, it's fascinating. You know, I also thought about, while everybody else is talking about, you know, the difference between competition and alternative, the other word I think about is rival. Like, was there ever a point with TNA between 2002 and now where it really, not only did it feel like something different, because there's always competition for Vince's companies. There's always something different from WWE, even if it's just, if it's merely a creation of WWE itself, like NXT. But has there ever been a point for TNA where it felt like not only was it a good alternative, but it could actually compete for eyeballs to turn away from WWE because they wanted to see TNA?
Oh. No.
Yeah. I feel like
in 06 that when WWE expanded to three brands and they were really wearing themselves thin and the Cena train had just gotten rolling and people weren't jumping on really quick, I felt like there was a point with TNA when Angle went there where it was
the
like,
Angle and Joe episode of Impact where they had the face-to-face confrontation felt like it had a ton of buzz. And then, like, the very first Hogan and Bischoff episode of Impact felt like it had a lot of buzz.
Yeah.
But then I think when people watched it and saw that their vision of Impact was basically a variety show like Raw, I think people tuned out, you know?
Yeah, and just the fact that it moved so many times on days and time slots, it went from 1 hour to two, but with the 2 hours, they didn't really change. You know, the Impact when it was on Fox Sports Net and Spike at first when it was 1 hour, it was a fucking great show because they would just,
just
load it up with like an X Division opener, a solid tag with the Naturals or Team 3D or somebody like that, and then a decent main event with either a mixture of X Division guys or Jeff Jarrett and somebody else, and then vignettes in between. Like, I remember they had a funeral, quote unquote, for Team 3D that was like hilarious. That was
really good.
That was right when it started in 2005. And there's a bunch of other things as they rolled into different regimes, like Hogan and Bischoff, and when Bruce Prichard came in and Russo was writing, and a lot of bad, obviously, to go with some of the good. But there's a lot more good than people realize, and I wonder if that happens with the library going into the network, potentially the WWE network, that might actually get scouted, that people will fish for that and find the good stuff, or it'll just simply be buried as like another Global, another UWF, another thing for you to click on, you know?
I'm gonna say something controversial because I firmly believe it. The Paparazzi Championship Series is better than anything I've ever seen from Mid-South Wrestling.
Oh, when Kevin Nash was with Eric Young and...
No, not Eric Young.
Alex Shelley and...
Alex Shelley and Sanjay and all those guys. Jay Lethal. Yep. Legitimately, probably my favorite wrestling comedy that doesn't involve The Rock.
Mm.
Yeah, that was
really
good
stuff. And I loved anything with Beer Money. That was pretty awesome, too. There's great aspects. Here's a problem. Well, here's the situation. By the way, guys, I just found, before we continue, because this is Main Event, I just found a great, most of you guys read it, if it was on one of our chats, but if you haven't read it, I'm reading it to the listeners now. It is a tremendous news story that just popped up. After days of speculation and rumors, World Wrestling Entertainment confirmed today that it has purchased the tape library of Total Nonstop Action, TNA Wrestling, only to discover that the entire collection is on Betamax. Sick Man was reportedly furious that he had to truck down to the basement of this Connecticut mansion to pull out his Sony Beta Stack 3000, usually which was behind Lord Alfred Hayes during the updates, which he hasn't used since the Coliseum home video release of bloopers, bleeps, and body slams. The tape sale was this line reminds me of you just now, JD. The tape sale was reportedly brokered by rocker Billy Corgan, who had previously acquired the tape library at a Nashville swap meet in exchange for the Smashing Pumpkins' Greatest Hits VHS box set. Somebody beat you right now. It is unclear how WWE will use the tapes, whether they will be transferred. This one's for you, Greg Phillips. Transferred to a digital format for the WWE Network or buried in the New Mexico desert alongside unsold copies of Atari's ill-fated E.T. game. By the way, great documentary on Netflix about that. McMahon reportedly spent the entire afternoon watching grainy footage of Ron Killings and wondered if he was any relation to R-Truth. Anyway, that's, of course, on the fantastic website, Kayfabe News. I need to read more. I need to read more
of
these.
To their credit, that VHS of the Smashing Pumpkins is really, really good.
I knew you were going to say that.
Were those tapes buried anywhere near Ric Flair, who was buried in the New Mexico desert during the Nitro?
Yep, yeah. and then he regrew and won the women's title from Charlotte. No, I'm only kidding. Here's the problem. Here's the problem TNA had. TNA's problem was never their roster. TNA's problem was their management. TNA's problem was their TV issues. When TNA roster-wise was at its best, as you guys have talked about, 2005 through, 2009. They were on Fox Sportsnet at fucking 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They were all over the place. They did their weird pay-per-views. They were like in limbo. They were like in no man's land. By the time they finally were grounded, when they go to Spike, 2009...
No, 2006.
2005, right after Raw went to USA Network.
Right.
Yep.
But they got buried until, like, what, 9 o'clock, I think, on Thursday nights or whatever.
Yes.
And they tried to have Bellator, and then they had other programming around it, and it just was getting lost. I contend that if they wanted to do this, go against what they should have done, honestly, was not go against Raw, but go against SmackDown. And they might have gotten a little buzz there. But by the time they decided, hey, let's go against Raw, they did the January 4th, and we're going to possibly do a future Place B podcast live watch, JR and I and some gentlemen, maybe some of you. And we're going to watch. We're not going to live watch. I think we're going to recap them. Both those episodes of Raw and Impact. Impact that night, which started, I think, before Raw. I think Impact started at 8 that night. Opened with... It was Jeff Hardy. Was it?
Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy came out of the crowd.
Yeah, and he fought. But they had a match, though.
Circular upside down cage match or whatever.
Right.
Where Masai couldn't climb out the top of it.
Right. Which. Okay.
Classic TNA.
Yeah. And the match itself actually was not bad. And the first hour was pretty boss, and they were able to get Hogan. Hogan came out right at 9 o'clock when Raw started. And Raw was a little lucky because they were in the middle of the whole GM thing. And the GM that night was Bret Hart, who made his first appearance on Raw since, let's see if I do the math, November 3rd, 1997. Because if November 9th was Survivor Series, obviously he was gone the next day. So November 3rd, 1997 was the last Raw he was on before this night in 2010. Now, they got lucky. If Bret wasn't there, then their magical moment on Raw would never have happened, and maybe TNA would have got lucky. But here was the problem. Hogan being on there, and even Bischoff, added a little spark, and things felt a little juicy, to quote JR's favorite song from Biggie. Then the minute those troglodytes, Nash, Hall, and Six came out, it suddenly turned into a white trash public access version of Nitro, and the whole show went right down the stinker. Because, again, they were too scared to be creative on their own and come up with something creative and new and fresh and thought, well, Bischoff's here. Worked in 96. Let's try it again. And failed.
Sean Morley over Christopher Daniels.
Well, I will retort with this, is that they did the same guys and shuffled them out there for WrestleMania 31 in the Sting Triple H match, and people loved it because it's old reliable, like you're saying. But for TNA to do something that was successful in WWF or WCW, and try to recapture the magic without any of that inventory to back themselves up. That was just one of the many, many different decisions that they made creatively that really blew up in their face, where they just weren't able to do that.
And I think it goes back to what I was saying, too, about know your audience. The reason people went crazy for it at WrestleMania 31 is because that's a crowd that likes the WWE and the WWF, so of course they're going to like legends from that. I mean, I'm sure there's some crossover there, but there's people who wanted TNA to succeed so because they didn't like the WWE product. So if you bring up WWE guys, it's going to get over like a fart in church. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you take those guys, you take Val Venus and put him over Christopher Daniels at the pay-per-view. You take the Nasty Boys and put them over Beer Money, I believe. it's like, it's the freaking Nasty Boys. They could barely walk.
Yeah.
In the ring.
The episode was punctuated by an incredible match between Styles and Angle, nothing to do with what Hogan and Bischoff did with the booking after this episode, you know, so.
Kurt Angle in 2010, people don't, Andrew, you can remember my championing of him on the block at that time.
Yeah.
He was the best wrestler in the world in 2010, and that's just my opinion.
He made Kenny Anderson look good. That's hard. That's hard, man.
Shawn Michaels couldn't do that.
But, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I remember that main event, and I feel like it salvaged that episode that night. But they didn't win the ratings because everybody got the hug. Everybody saw the hug. This is where WWE is fucking genius. What was the one thing that all the fans still wanted to see that was still unresolved? And that's Brett and Shawn. Sure, Brett was back.
Who drove the Hummer? We want to see that too.
Maybe that's why Goldberg's coming back now.
Bischoff
we try
did
that now.
Bischoff did?
Yeah, the New Blood Nitro.
Yep.
Bischoff comes out of the Hummer, I believe.
You Nitro. So that night, WWE got lucky, caught lightning in a bottle. Brett was there. Brett asked Shawn, and you had that tension. And then remember, Brett had the. They did it perfectly. Even the camera angle was perfect when Shawn, they hugged, and then Shawn stopped, but Shawn was in the tune-up-the-band stance.
Yep.
While Brett had his back turned, you're like, motherfucker. And then they didn't, and then he hugged. But still, either way, it was a win. Shawn super kicks him, or they hug. Win-win. And from a wrestling history perspective, Impact was going to be very hard to beat that. So I'll give TNA the benefit of the doubt that was going to be tough from a wrestling emotion standpoint to counter.
Yeah.
And Hogan, well, let me finish my point. And then Hogan and Bischoff on a different, well, Bischoff, nobody gives a shit, but Hogan on a different brand after he had already been back. And only Hogan could do this kind of thing. After he'd already come back in 2002 and then went through the whole thing and had the great JR and I mean, documented it in 02 in the Vintage Vaults. He was wrestling his ass off in 2002. And then 03 and then Mr. America and all that. And then he came back and fought, you know, got in the Hall of Fame in 05 and then fought Shawn and then came back in 06 and fought Orton to a new match. Then we hadn't seen him in a while. I don't think he popped up much in the next few years. I think he came out at Homecoming, right? Well, that was in 05, so never mind. So seeing him on a different brand again was unique. So they did have that going. They had a lot going for them that night. And had they mixed the current with the legend, they might have got away with it. They might have pulled off a stunner. Because 2010 in-ring in WWE, like 09 into 10, was not great.
No.
Not great at all.
You're talking about WWE. And,
yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah, WWE.
They had great overlap of talent.
But
the work rate was not all there.
If you take out Shawn, Taker 2, watching WrestleMania 26 from beginning to end is like watching snow melt. That's how unremarkable that WrestleMania was. And they had a lot of issues throughout the rest of 2010 on top of it. So TNA had a shot. Had they just trusted themselves to balance good...
That there was an,
Go ahead, Greg.
Trusted that there was an audience out there that wanted to see great wrestling as opposed to the, you know, the emotional beats that WWE was trying to put out. Because like you said, okay, WWE's work rate's down. Well, the one thing TNA had in 2010 was a roster loaded with work rate from top to bottom. So, you know, I don't know why they wouldn't just rely on their biggest strength.
Just for the shits of it, I'm gonna look something up. What was the last pay-per-view in 2009? What was usually their December pay-per-view? Final Resolution?
Final Resolution.
Final Resolution. All right, I'm gonna look that up. I want to look at the card of Final Resolution.
I know the main event. If you want me to tell it to you.
Nope, I found it. Okay. Here we go. But thank you, Rish. here's the card. Here's the card for Final Resolution 09. Okay, so this is the last pay-per-view going into the new. By the way, this was also the last six-sided ring pay-per-view. And honestly, guys, that was stupid. My personal opinion. Maybe we'll debate that. That was dopey. Changing up things is one thing, but a ring is four sides, period. And I watched a live TNA house show, and I thought, first of all, the rings on their house shows were like phone booths. They were considerably smaller than their regular six-sided ring. But I don't know. For me, it didn't seem to reflect well on television. But that's just my opinion. Here was the card for the last pay-per-view in 09, Final Resolution. By the way, Shelley and Sabin were on the front. British Invasion defeated the Machine Guns for the tag titles. Tara defeated my girl ODB and her big boobs. Nash, Sheik Abdul Bashir, Samoa Joe, and Rob Terry defeated my man Bobby Roode, my man James Storm, World Elite, and Consequences Creed in a Feast or Fired match, whatever I don't even remember what that gimmick was, but anyway.
It's where you got the briefcases and inside of them was like a title match or you got fired.
Ah, okay. Sheik Abdul Bashir, by the way, got fired.
Racist.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what's hilarious? That's every suitcase for every TNA talent right now. You either get a title match or you're gone.
Oh, you're gone. Matt Morgan, Hernandez, D'Angelo De Niro, and Suicide defeated Rhino, Jesse Neal, and Team 3D in an 8-man tag elimination match.
Everything wrong with Suicide.
That is incredibly random.
I wish Suicide still wrestled.
I do too.
Lashley, oh good God. Lashley defeated Scott Steiner in a last man standing match. What if they both fell? It would take them fucking 8 minutes to get up.
That was an amazing feud though, because Bobby Lashley's child had Steiner's eyes.
Literally?
In Abyss, a jar. That's Abyss. Why he wore sunglasses all the time.
Yes. Abyss and Mick Foley defeated Raven and Dr. Stevie in a Foley's Funhouse Rules match.
Is this the one where Daphne got seriously injured?
I don't remember.
Oh, I remember that one. I don't know if it was this one or Bound for Glory, but Daphne took a horrible injury.
Kurt Angle defeated Desmond Wolfe in a 3 Degrees of Pain match.
Awesome match. One.
I remember that.
26 minutes.
Prime TNA.
Everything
right and wrong in TNA up to this time period in one card.
I loved when the Pope used to call him Desmond Wolfie.
That's the kind of match.
That was a great feud. That was a great rivalry.
It totally was.
That's the kind of feud. See, that's the kind of match that WWE fans are going to want to see, and that's why we're going to get like a 9-disc Kurt set, which will drive JR up the wall in a good way, and that's why he'll go to the Hall of Fame. In the main event, AJ Styles defeated Daniels 21-02 to retain the World Heavyweight Championship. All right, so that was the last.
It wasn't just Daniels, though. It was Samoa Joe as well, right? Wasn't that a triple threat?
No, it's just the two of them.
Joe was in the Feast or Fired match.
Joe was in the Feast or Famine match.
It must have been the pay-per-view before that, which was after Bound for Glory, where they had the three-way rematch, which was really, really great.
Turning Point.
Right? Yeah,
that was AJ Daniels and Joe in a three-way.
I mean, you can't like not go. You can't go wrong with that. You know?
All right, now, if you looked at that card in Bubble, Steve, I'll ask you first. What were your thoughts on the company just looking at that card?
Well, as I just said, it was kind of TNA in a nutshell at this time period for me. You had a lot of good and a lot of bad mixed up. I think I'm in the, you have Dr. Stevie, of all things. You have Kurt Angle and Desmond Wolfe, with, like Greg said, it is an awesome feud. Wolfe came in right away from Ring of Honor and just made a huge, impact. Bad pun. Not intended. But then you also had, you know, your Sheik Abdul-Bashirs, Stevie Richards as, like, an odd psychiatrist-type character, where everyone knows it was Stevie Richard. Four of your top five matches were the exact same as the previous pay-per-view.
Isn't that what your door says, though, Dr. Stevie?
Yes, it does.
That's what I thought. Okay. That's what I figured.
And I wear scrubs. Like, didn't Stevie Richard wear scrubs? Because that's what psychiatrists wear?
Yes. And then you have TLC playing in the background in a loop. Sorry, that was a bad pun. All right, continue.
So you have, you know, the first match in the card, Brutus, you know, Magnus and Williams and the Motor City Machine Guns. So great. And then it just goes back kind of back and forth. So it was hard to, like, really get, you know, it's just kind of bipolar in a way. It's kind of like SmackDown is right now. Like, you have a lot of good on top and a lot of just odd stuff at the you have the ascension going on basically in the middle.
Yeah. But to be honest, that was also TNA sort of at her best, because it was almost like WCW in 94, right? Well, great coincidence, right before Hogan got there and he was started taking over. Ric Flair was booking for about 3 or 4 months, and Spring Stampede and Slamboree were like two of the greatest shows in 94 that WCW has ever had. Right before Hogan came in, and they kind of flipped the script. Kind of the same way where they were in this kind of placeholder position where they didn't want to, like, rattle anything, so they just decided to kind of keep the storylines basic. And guess what? That's where you get best wrestling. And that's, and you know, to be honest, that's sort of TNA at their best, because when you can make the storylines kind of simple, barring the Dr. Stevie stuff, and you can kind of make people feel compelled to actually watch the wrestling and watch Daniels and watch AJ and watch Samoa Joe. Yeah, you got some pretty damn good performers here. You see him at NXT. You see him on SmackDown now. You know, so there's a lot of great stuff there, but there's so much, there was just so much inconsistency with the leadership, the managerial decision-making, like Scott was saying. That was really at the end what brought him down.
Now, let's go 1 month ahead in the first post-Hogan, not post-Hogan, but post-premiere for Hogan pay-per-view, which was Genesis, which was January 17th, which was 2 weeks after the premiere. Here was the card. Amazing Red defeated Brian Kendrick in a singles match of TNA X Division title, which sounds like a good match, actually. Sean Morley defeated Daniels, as you said, Gregory. Tara ODB.
In 2010, just let's remember, in 2010.
And not Tara in a very long match either.
And what?
Not in a very long match either.
No, 907. Tara and ODB in a rematch for the knockout title, 2 out of 3 falls, which ODB lost 2 straight. Weird. Matt Morgan and Hernandez win the TNA world title from British Invasion. Desmond Wolfe defeated D'Angelo De Niro. Beer Money beat The Band, which we know who The Band was. Anderson defeated Abyss. And then the main event, which easily, I mean, this might be the first match that needs to go on a paper, on a DVD. AJ beats Kurt in a shade under half an hour to retain the world title. But already, now the team, where's the Motor City Machine Guns? They're, I don't know what happened at that time, but where are they? No, we see the two fucking old farts in the mix now. Sean Morley's in the mix. Immediately, things feel different. Flair is involved, right, with Styles at this point. Now, who was the babyface, Greg?
They were both still babyfaces. Styles actually turned at the end of that match, if memory serves.
They wanted Styles to dye his hair blonde and be like mini
Little Nate.
Yeah.
Yep. And then, like, they had, it was the inexplicable decision to turn AJ heel at the end of that match and have him align with Flair and then start wearing the if you guys remember, he not only, the way that they distinguished him from Flair is he wore the Ric Flair robe, but they put feathers all over it. So he looked like a giant, like, peacock strutting to the ring. It was horrendous.
Yes, he did turn heel. Angle chased Flair around the ringside, but when he returned to the ring, he ran straight into a clothesline from Styles. Flair then retrieved the championship belt from ringside and slid it to Styles, who thought about using the belt for a moment, but in the end made the decision, hit Angle with it, thus turning heel, threw the referee back in the ring, and made the 3 count, which meant that Styles retained the championship. Now, the following month, and against all odds, they did something called the 8-card stud tournament. And I don't hear anything. Probably that's just how good the tournament was going. It meant the winner would get to challenge the world. So it was the number one contenders tournament, in other words. And the winner would face the TNA champion at Lockdown in April. So they had all those. Then we move on along. Foley was in it. I mean, really? Really? I mean, come on. Here's what the Nasties beat Team 3D. I mean, what the fuck? I mean, come on. AJ beat Joe. This was Joe's briefcase title shot. And then the main event, D'Angelo De Niro, a.k.a.
The Pope.
Yes. And what was his name? Why am I blanking? I just watched him. He was at December to Dismember.
Elijah Burke.
Elijah Burke, thank you. Defeated Anderson to win the tournament, so he actually got the title.
Horrible yeah, color he commentator, was, by the way.
Oh, he is yes. a horrible color commentator, but he was actually really hot as a character at that point. Like, it was the right decision to have him win that tournament because he was starting to catch fire a little bit on the show. He had a pretty cool character, pretty good amount of charisma. So, you know, that tournament actually was not bad, and it also started the Anderson and Angle feud.
So, we're going to talk more about this in the coming shows because this scenario is not over yet. We don't know what the official situation is, but we do need to talk about it because I would really love to see the TNA library in on the network because I really would love to watch all these, believe it or not. And I've gone on Amazon and the DVDs are ridiculously expensive, believe it or not. I couldn't believe it either.
It's because they didn't produce enough of them.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm pretty sure they're all on YouTube, like with their pay-on-demand service, and I think it's like $3 a month or something like that.
Well, I'll say this, too. That'll be your first giveaway if the WWE buys it. The YouTube police is going to come after all the TNA clips and start pulling them.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to
yeah.
be number
McDevitt's
one.
McDevitt's going to be there with his little IT goons.
Which is going to piss me off because all the – I mean, Nick and I just recently went through and rewatched all of the paparazzi segments.
Yeah.
And it's going to piss us off if they take those away from
us. Like, right around that era, I just recently watched an AJ – not AJ, Angle-Jeff Hardy match that went 40 minutes because they – like, neither guy would, like, either submit or get pinned. So the match just kept going and going. But it was a great match, you know, because you
get – They didn't actually wrestle. They just kept taking somas back and
forth. Passing out until Eric
new twist
was like,
new twist on a last man standing match.
Oh, God. All right. We'll continue to discuss this. Now, I wonder if they're going to put all those monthly pay-per-view cards. I mean, they must still have everything. Right? The monthly pay-per-views.
I bet the Asylum stuff, too.
All the Asylum stuff. All the Impacts.
That means we'll get the Johnsons, Richard and Rod Johnson.
And Cheeks.
And we have
someone in a garbage can.
And Puppet!
I call him Ice Fist, actually. Puppet.
And we have a brand new show on the network, Explosion.
That's right.
Starring Puppet.
Sports Entertainment Extreme.
Here's a decent question before we close out. If the WWE actually bought the TV slot, would they actually be responsible enough to have TNA? Or would it just not matter to them and we would have another Black Saturday? Where they would just...
Come on. Reese, do you really need to analyze that question? Come on. Really?
It's an honest question.
It's going to be fucking Velocity or Afterburn.
It's going to be really? WWE Explosion.
They should do I was going to say, I thought it was called Sexed. No, what was it?
Jacked?
Not Jacked. Access? Excess? Remember the show with Coach and Trish
yeah.
at like 1 o'clock in the morning?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Excess, yeah.
Excess.
I remember yep. Raven used to do it, too.
That's right.
Yeah, because that was the show where Sean first admitted that he knew about the screw job. They made
that
a whole
correct.
Segment out.
Yeah, he was right. Born right around the time he was born again. He was trying to dipping his toes back in, see if he could.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Only dipping other stuff.
So looking at YouTube, you can go back and order any pay-per-view from 2012 back for 99 cents, including their other DVDs, like your History of TNA, your Phenomenal Best of AJ Styles. They break it up into like two parts.
And to be honest, those are not bad purchases.
On one hand, though, it seems like a bargain, but if you pay 99 cents for that show that was only a penny, that's a huge markup.
That is true.
And everyone...
I did order that penny pay-per-view, by the way, back in the day.
Greg Phillips, before we... Because I know you have to bolt, and we appreciate you being... Even though you threw a dig at me for really... I don't understand what...
Yeah, that was random.
I liked it better when Nick Duke was drunk and drooling, but...
It's just because you're a Notre Dame fan, Scott. Sorry.
Come on. They're 2-3. Give me a break. Come on. You kicked our ass 3 years. What was it? 3-4 years ago in the national championship. What more do you want from me? Brian could never beat us.
Brian Kelly is just not a likable person.
No, he's not. He's not. I agree.
By the way, Scott, do you notice Brian Van Gorder, the Fire defensive coordinator, he looks a lot like Kevin Nash when he came back in 2011 in WWE.
Yes, he did.
And a lot.
He obviously coached like him, too.
My Jewish grandma has that Brian Van
you, what? My
Jewish grandmother has a Brian Van Gorder.
Bookman eat it off like, what's her name's mole?
Yes.
Greg, so. Greg, let me ask you this. How many TNA That's not pork. How many TNA DVDs do you own, Mr. Phillips?
Let me think about it for a second. I've got the original Best of the X Division. I've got the original Best of AJ Styles. I got an Abyss DVD in a grab bag at a house show a few years ago. Wow. And I have never watched it, if you can imagine. And I think that's it. I think three TNA DVDs, maybe four. I might have another X Division one too.
Did you ever buy one of the brown bag specials?
Yeah, that's what that came in. The Abyss thing.
Okay, I bought a brown bag special once. The T-shirt was the worst looking Jeff Hardy shirt I ever saw in my life. The banner thing was some generic Impact logo. I thought it was gonna be like Mickey James or something. And the figure, I think, was Nashua, just debuted at the Rumble. So they're probably dumping all the crap.
And yeah.
The DVDs were Foley, Mick Foley Hardcore, the Best of the X Division, and something else. But
I think everybody had that X Division DVD.
If you don't own Jeff Jarrett, King of the Mountain, you're really not a TNA fan.
I'm looking at my four-disc motherfucker
right on the top shelf, goddammit.
I can tap that. I have one night in Mike today.
All right, we're going to take a break.
You know who that is, Taz.
It's a wicked bust up. Oh, God. He's eating a sandwich. Greg Phillips, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Greg Phillips.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guy.
Well, man, Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast and column. The comics guys are fantastic. All the comic stuff on PlaceBeNation.com is tremendous. Greg, thank you.
Most of it is fantastic.
Yeah, we don't want to give the seller's point too much credit, right?
Yeah, seriously.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, PlaceToBeNation, technology seemed to have failed us this evening. To give you a little background, I hope you enjoyed that first segment. We apologize for the audio quality. It's not as crisp and stellar as it usually is. But a little background tonight. When we were setting up, breaking the fourth wall here, breaking kayfabe, if you will, this evening, Thursday evening, there was apparently a worldwide Skype issue. Microsoft had put a piece on one of their sites that Skype had a login issue and was not letting people in. As you know, if you can figure out how podcasts work, and of course you do, we use Skype to connect all of our, myself and, our guests or co-hosts, as JR and I do for the Place B podcast. Well, the Skype app, or, the Skype that you download and put on your computer, did not work. So we had to use the Skype web application, like the actual web window. And, as you can tell, the quality of the show was sound-wise was a little shaky, but we got through it. However, segment two, which was a full-blown No Mercy preview with myself, Jordan Duncan, Andrew Reich, and Steve Willey, corrupted and AKA went the way of GTV and the whoever drove the Hummer that tried to hit Goldberg. So we sincerely apologize. Technology failed us tonight, and we do not have a segment two. So it's kind of an abbreviated main event where we mostly talk TNA. However, of course, as you know, No Mercy is this Sunday. Here's my picks, at least, for the card. Baron Corbin is taking on Jack Swagger in the pre-match, and I think it's safe to say Corbin will probably win. Kurt Hawkins is making his return to WWE after being booted a long time ago. One of the major brothers with Zack Ryder, and he was also an edgehead. He's taking on an undetermined, as of right now, opponent, but he'll probably win. If you're going to make vignettes about him, you might as well, have him win. So he will win that match against whoever the predetermined opponent is. Carmella will take on Nikki Bella. I do not have good feelings about this match. The guys didn't either. And Nikki Bella is probably going to win. JD picked Carmella, but I'm curious to see how that match goes, because for those that have watched SmackDown Live, Carmella has been utterly abysmal. So we'll see how that match goes. But I have a feeling Nikki Bella is going to win as well. For the Intercontinental Championship, The Miz will take on Dolph Ziggler again. This time, if Dolph loses, he retires. It has been one of the most compelling storylines of SmackDown Live, but Dolph, in my opinion, has pretty much ran out of juice. I think The Miz wins because I think it adds a lot of great. I think it adds a lot of great depth to the storyline if he has to retire. You know, and then maybe he'll help Daniel Bryan or he'll just go off TV. Curious to see what happens. But I have a feeling The Miz, and we talked about it in the Lost segment, that The Miz would be the kind of guy that would be good at breaking the Honky Tonk Man's record of the longest reign as Intercontinental Champion. So I have a feeling that I like that theory. So I think that's what's going to, well, I think it's going to continue anyway. I think The Miz retains his championship. Randy Orton will take on Bray Wyatt in the match that was supposed to happen at Backlash, but Randy Orton was not cleared for his concussion protocols. It's very hard to pick Bray Wyatt in matches because he seems to always lose. I'm going to have faith and pick him. I think they're going to use like residual injuries from the Brock Lesnar match at SummerSlam, and I think this feud continues. So I like Bray Wyatt here. For the Tag Team Championship, your champion, Heath Slater and Rhino, to take on the heel Usos. Steve Willey, I believe it was, made a good point that Heath Slater and Rhino were more compelling when they were chasing the belts than they are as champions. And that, you know, that ship sailed at Backlash when they actually won the tournament and became champions. So I don't see this match being a big upset with Heath Slater and Rhino winning. I think their ship has sailed, and I think the Usos will win the tag titles, because obviously the end game is that American Alpha is going to win the belts. So it's just a question of when. I say the Usos win, will become champions, and defeat the Heath Slater and Rhino machine. For the SmackDown Women's Championship, Becky Lynch, the champion, she won it at Backlash, will defend the title against Alexa Bliss. Rish, I believe, was the one who made a good point. He says this is a lot like Dean and Dolph at SummerSlam. Kind of a, all right, we'll give you a shot, kid. And Becky wins. She is one of the hardest working divas in this company, or women wrestlers in this company. I think they want some stability with that women's title. So we all thought that Becky Lynch would win. And finally, the main event, triple threat match for the WWE World Championship. Your champion, AJ Styles, defends against both Dean Ambrose and John Cena. Somebody picked Cena to win. I think it was Rish. Picked Cena to win. The rest of us picked AJ to retain. I believe Dean is taking time off. I thought I saw that somewhere. We'll see if that holds true. But I think AJ needs to hold this belt for longer than 2 weeks. So I believe AJ Styles will retain the championship. So there's quickly your No Mercy picks. I hope you enjoy the show. It's this Sunday night from the Golden One Center in Sacramento, California. And then in 3 weeks, Hell in a Cell will take place on Sunday, October 30th. That's a Raw pay-per-view from the TD Garden in Boston. Our next show will be not the week leading into that, but the week before that. So, of course, Raw had to screw shit up and not be every 2 weeks, which worked out nice for us. But we'll have a great show here in Main Event. Have some great guests. We'll talk about this continuing TNA situation with Impact Wrestling. We'll figure out, what's going on with the two, updates on Raw and SmackDown, see how things are going there, and have some continued fun. We apologize again for the technological issues and Skype's failure to live tonight. But we hope you enjoy the show and the first half anyway. So, for Andrew Reich, for Jordan Duncan, for Steve Willey, and for Greg Phillips, I am Scott Criscolo. You've been in the Main Event. Enjoy No Mercy on Sunday. We will talk to you in 2 weeks. I got long side burns and my hair slick back. I'm coming to your town in my pink Cadillac. I'm just a honky-tonk man. I'm just a honky-tonk man. I'm just a honky-tonk man. I'm cool, I'm cocky, I'm bad. I pick a mean guitar, I wear a blue suede shoes. You ought to hear me sing the snakeskin blues. I'm just a honky-tonk man. I'm just a honky-tonk man. I'm just a honky-tonk man. I'm cool, I'm cocky, I'm bad. Bro, Elvis, let the honky-tonk man show you how to rock and roll. Elvis knew he couldn't get into it if it had handles on it. Ooh, have mercy, baby. Listen to the honky-tonk man pick that guitar. Don't make you run it wild. I got Peggy Sue beside me. The Colonel's in the back. I'm coming to your town in my pink Cadillac. I'm just a honky-tonk man. Just a honky-tonk man. I'm just a honky-tonk man. I'm cool, I'm cocky, I'm bad. I'm just a honky-tonk man. 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 I'm cool, I'm cocky, I'm bad. I'm just a honky-tonk man.